Today's program has been brought to you by the Greenhouse Tavern, one of Bon Appetit magazine's top 10 restaurants in America. For more information, visit www.thegreenhousetavern.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, and welcome to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here today to tell you about what a difference a day makes. I love that tagline. That's amazing. With Tog Braun
of
Maine Dayboat Scallops.
Thank you for having me here.
A pleasure. I mean, I'm sitting next to an old box of seafood. Luckily, not live and crawling around like that Woody Allen scene, even though that is hysterical. I'm glad that it's boxed up for now. But we're going to open up the box and talk about seafood in general, as well as scallops up in Maine. I myself have quite the affinity towards all things bivalve mollusks.
As well you should, especially Maine scallops, because they're the best in the world.
And I can attest. I mean, I've had my fair share and crave them all the time and sad when they're not with me. Mm-hmm. Are you a Mainer for life, or is it just, you know, like Maine jingoism?
It's the way life should be.
Yeah. Maine, better known as vacation land. Mm-hmm. The majority of people that I know up there are associated with fishing somehow. Mm-hmm. Where did you grow up in Maine, and what was life like?
Perfect, of course. No, I grew up on in Cape Elizabeth, which is just south of Portland. My parents are both teachers, but my father also lobstered in the summer. He still does lobster. He no longer teaches. And I can't explain why it is that I developed this sort of fascination with commercial fishing, because that was just one thing that, you know, my father did. He was also a Maine guide. But something very early on, I caught the bug and became fascinated with Maine's commercial fishing industry.
Yeah, it's almost a given that everyone lobsters in Maine, that they do this one thing. I'm the mayor of the town, and I am a lobster man.
Oh, God, no. There are fewer than 6,000 licensed lobstermen in Maine, and there are, I think it's 1.3 million people. So only the lucky ones lobster.
Yeah. So it's a preconception that everyone is a lobster person.
Yes, you damn New Yorkers. Yeah. You've got these preconceptions about Maine.
Yeah. So, I mean, then you think of the sheer quantity, the volume of lobster that comes from Maine, mm-hmm. with the amount of people that are actually working on it. Mm-hmm. I mean, how much do these boats bring in? It must be massive amounts.
Well, it varies. I think last year we had brought in 123 million pounds of lobster, and that's not normal. I mean, the historic average was quite a bit less than that. It was about a quarter of that. We've had an explosion of lobster in the Gulf of Maine recently. But yeah, I mean, there are guys that are bringing in quite a bit of lobster. Unfortunately, right now, the price is not as high as it should be. The prices that they're getting right now, I believe the 2011 prices were the same that they got in, if I'm remembering correctly, it was 1997.
Yeah, and that's without inflation.
That's the same exact, you know, dollar for dollar boat price. But then the costs have skyrocketed. What they're paying for insurance, for fuel, for bait, that's gone way up. So really, if it weren't for the volume that they're landing right now, a lot of these guys would be going under. So it's a dangerous predicament. And in years past, fishermen were able to switch back and forth between different fisheries. For a number of reasons, in the past 20 years, the diversity in Maine's fishing industry has collapsed, I would say. You know, they used to have federal permits and they could go out in federal waters, and there were groundfish in the Gulf of Maine. Number one, there aren't nearly as many groundfish in the Gulf of Maine now. And number two, they don't have access to those federal permits. And we don't have enough time to get into the reasons why that is right now. But so they, you know, fish for shrimp and scallops and lobster and do other things. And now we have a lot of fishermen in a lot of coastal communities that are dependent just on the lobster resource. And that's one of the reasons why I think it's so important that we bring back Maine's scallop fishery, because that's going to be an opportunity for these fishermen to be making a lot more money and be bringing that money into their communities. And if the lobster resource should take a downturn, they've got that, you know, they're hedging their bets.
Yeah, I mean, not only is it a good fallback, but it promotes aquaculture as a whole. I mean, the aqua system.
Yeah, I wouldn't say aquaculture. There are a lot of fishermen that would get pissed off if you equated them to aquaculturists, yeah. Even though, you know, in many ways, they're lobstermen that believe that they are farming lobster.
Yeah.
But yes, and there is, you know, there is aquaculture right now for scallops is just beginning. But I mean, I focus on the commercial scallop fishery and bringing that back because we've made such a great deal of progress in the past few years to bring that fishery back.
Yeah, I mean, growing up, was the spread at the table full of scallops? Was it full of lobster? Was there that bounty?
No, I would say that, you know, my parents being teachers, they didn't make a whole lot of money. And so if money was tight, we'd eat illegal lobsters. Which I shouldn't admit to, perhaps. But no, I mean, we ate a lot of lobster, and it was nothing special. I remember many days that my parents would sit at the kitchen counter playing cribbage, eating Ruffles potato chips and lobster. And, you know, that was the lunch. So it's definitely not it's not looked at as something as special as it is outside of Maine.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's talk about the more logistical things, the policy, because mm-hmm. you actually went to school. For more of that than anything else. What did you go to school for?
Well, my undergraduate was in geology from decades ago. I got a master's in marine policy from the University of Maine, and I focused on fisheries management. I looked into the factors that led to the development of Maine's first interlocal clam management program, which means a bunch of towns got together to manage their clam resource. And that was actually where my scallop research started as well. I did a project on the Alaskan weather vane scallop fishery.
Also the disappearing infrastructure of...
Oh, that was contract work that I did afterwards, yes, for the Massachusetts Fishermen's Partnership, looking at how... really Maine and other communities throughout New England, but I would say particularly in Maine, lost their fisheries infrastructure. When a lot of these boats were going into these harbors, you know, they had the equipment to, you know, to haul the fish off the boats. They had the places to buy ice, the places to, you know, work on your boat. And that's no longer the case. Largely now we have communities that can handle the lobster resource, which is very different than the ground fish resource or scallops or things like that.
Yeah, I mean, we talked briefly before about Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And that without Canada, the Maine lobster industry probably could not happen
mm-hmm.
because it is an infrastructure of a sort for that industry.
Right.
Itself.
There's processing that goes on. I mean, right now, there's a lot of talk going on right now in Maine about how to make the lobster industry more profitable. Because like I said, the prices that they're getting are the same now as they were, you know, 15, 20 years ago, and the costs are so much higher. And one of the things that they're looking at is the fact that we land this lobster, we put it in trucks and we ship it to Canada. It's processed in Canada, which means it's cooked and picked, and then it comes back down, they sell it back to us. And so a lot of fishermen look at that and say, that's wrong, we need to stop doing that, and damn Canada. But then without Canada, like, we have a huge influx of soft-shell markets that come on, you know, they come onto the market in the summer. And if we didn't have Canada to absorb that, the price would be even lower than it is right now.
Yeah. Is there a secondary business partner, in a sense, that helps drive the scallop industry? Or is this something completely different? I know we've been
talking... This is something completely different and so much better.
Yeah. What a difference a day makes.
Exactly. Taste the difference a day makes. I am obsessed with Maine's scallop fishery. I can say that. I mean, I'm on the borderline of being a little bit crazy about it, I would say. I started working for the Department of Marine Resources in 2007. And I think on the intro to this show, you mentioned that, you know, Maine is known for lobster, and that's true. And really, it is like the star quarterback in Maine. To the point where when I started at DMR, the Department of Marine Resources, DMR, they had two resource management coordinators, one for lobster and one for everything else. And I was the everything else. And because I was everything else, I got to focus on, you know, what I wanted to focus on. And I looked at the scallop fishery, which is a fishery that had the value of Maine scallop fishery had been second to lobster for, you know, a number of years. And then there was a huge boom in the Gulf of Maine, and a bunch of guys got into it and they overfished it and it collapsed and it just didn't recover. And fisheries management, I mean, I could go on, I could bore you for a really long time on, you know, communal action dilemmas and why that one fisherman knows he shouldn't take that fish, but if he doesn't take it, someone else is. So there are dilemmas that are really hard to solve. Well, with scallops, it's far more simple than in other fisheries in terms of people generally, you know, accept the fact that if you close an area and just don't fish it for a while, the scallops will come back. Maine scallops grow at a rate of anywhere between 30 to 50% per year. So if you had a bank account that was growing at 30 to 50% a year, you would not be taking off the principal. You know, you'd be letting it sit there. And so I administered the Scallop Advisory Council, which is a group of industry people in Maine that had been placed there by the legislature to advise the department. But they hadn't really done much for a number of years. It's sort of they would get together and talk about scalloping. And so I came on, I'll spitfire, and you know, I'm sort of energetic anyway. And I'm like, we're going to fix this. And so, you know, we started, you know, I started baking cookies for them and, you know, showing them the love and letting them know that, you know, they were appreciated and that we can actually do something. And they got, you know, they really got onto it. And we ended up going from having a scallop fishery that basically the way it had been regulated for decades was, we're going to limit this to a season where it won't interfere with lobstering. I mean, that's a slight exaggeration, but not much.
Yeah, because, I mean, some of the fishermen that you work for now or work with now, also do lobstering, but then in off seasons, because scalloping, I mean, we've talked about the lifespan a little bit. I want to touch on that some more because I want to define what a scallop really is. But there's a very short season in which the scallops that you work with are fished for, correct?
That's right. And when I came on board, it was anywhere from December 1st to April 15th. And then with the Scallop Advisory Council, we cut the season back to any 70 days between those. So we cut the season in half and we did a lot of things. We established a daily limit. We stopped allowing new licenses. And the big thing is that we put these closures in place to allow the resource to recover. And they were in place for 3 years. And this year right here is the first year that, that the fishermen have been able to fish those. And they're getting back in there and saying, wow, these worked. You know, and I mean, I'm very proud of my death threat that I received as a result of what happened when I was at DMR. But when I saw what was coming out of those scallop closed areas, I'm like, screw you, I told you.
I mean, we were talking a little bit before about how I feel about the New York fishing industry, but that is a whole nother story. But a large part of this is not just reviving, but re-education. Because the focus has been on one thing, on lobster, or the way they've been treating scallops poorly for so many years, that if you treat scallops correctly for so many years, that there is a yield.
That's right. If you just leave them alone, there's a way to bring that fishery back, and they've done that, and it's starting. I mean, I cannot say that this is any, like 100% sustainable, and it could be, you know, green lights all ahead, but it's a lot closer now than it was in the past, and the landings are going up, but they're going up at a sustainable level. So we closed these areas. Some of them increased 800% in the first year and a half. The biomass increased by 800%. And I was really worried that when they were opened up, that DMR would face political pressure to, you know, let the boys work. We've got a, you know, a Tea Party governor. We've got, you know, a lot of people that are anti-government.
Well, why couldn't a Tea Party governor just throw tea parties? I mean, just really, that would be much more exciting.
I have to say, though, and I mean, I was never a fan of the Tea Party, and I didn't vote for our current governor, and yet he really seems to value Maine's fishing industry, and so I have to give him the thumbs up on the priorities that he's put into making Maine's fishing industry more profitable. And the Maine scallop fishery is the huge opportunity, I believe, in Maine because of how much, we know there's so much uncertainty in fisheries, but we pretty much know as certain as any fisheries plan can be, if you just leave scallops there and leave them alone, give them a break, they'll come back. You will get much larger scallops, so you're getting more per pound. Plus, you'll get more. It's a win-win. And what's going on in Maine scallop fishery right now is win-win.
So you've defined a little bit of the areas that they grow in. What is the environment like? Are they bays? Are they, you know, miles off the coast?
No, by definition, it's a state fishery. And so they have to be caught within 3 miles of shore. And, sometimes it's in the rocks, sometimes it's in the mud. But all along Maine's coast, there are pockets. One of the most productive areas is Cobb's Cook Bay down east, and that's going to be more of a mud area. And there are rock areas, you know, gravel, lots of different areas all along Maine's iconic coastline.
Yeah. And what is a scallop? I know it as a bivalve, as a mollusk, but I only know those words because they feel cool to say.
Here's another cool word for you, or two words, Placopecten magellanicus.
I'm going to listen to this again and just repeat it over and over.
Placopecten magellanicus. That's the genus and species of the giant sea scallop. That's what we have in Maine. Maine is the only state that has a commercial fishery for it, and that's because we are the only state that has cold waters that are close to shore that are cold enough for it to exist. So it is what we do. The scallop that we as Americans eat is really just the adductor muscle, which is the, you know, a little piece. You know, you can think of it as a, you know, a quarter size or half dollar size muscle that they use to open and close their shell. And it gets really big in scallops because they actually move by jetting water through their shell. So that's why they get so big. In other parts of the world, they can eat the entire scallop. You can't in Maine because of paralytic shellfish poison concerns, because the Gulf of Maine has very high levels of PSP toxins. And unlike other bivalves, the scallops concentrate it in their tissues. However, the adductor muscle, which is what we eat, is safe.
Yeah. I mean, aside from the adductor, what could you get from a scallop?
You could get the roe. And I'm actually, funny you'd ask that question. I am working with a researcher in Maine to get some grant funds to prove that scallop roe could be safely eaten throughout the year in Maine. And I want to get a market for roe on scallops. It'll be a few years before we do that. I actually have the only license in the state right now to sell scallop adductor muscles on the half shell, so that I can sell you the scallop shell. So, you know, 5.5-inch shell with the adductor muscle on it. And that makes a really nice presentation. A lot of chefs use that, you know, it's a nice tapas presentation. And, you know, it comes with its very own plate.
Yeah.
So that's nice.
Scallops. I mean,
no, I'm sorry. It's scallops.
Yeah, I know. I wish I had a Mainer accent. I can't do that breathing thing. Yeah, I'm getting better at it.
excuse me.
So, I mean, I understand your infatuation and mm-hmm. focus on scallops. Was it hard to talk to or convert some of these fishermen who weren't farming scallops or weren't working with scallops mm-hmm. that this was, well, not necessarily a cash crop, because I know mm-hmm. you personally aren't in it for the money. Mm-hmm. You're in it for the phoenixology of the scallop itself.
I want Maine's scallop fishermen to be making more money. And I mean, at this point, I'm on a self-funded promotional campaign for Maine scallops. So,
and if anyone's listening out there, Toge is more than willing to come to your restaurant, mm-hmm. chefs, and educate you about scallops and
lobster and shrimp and halibut and all the other exciting seafoods that you can get from Maine.
Excellent. So, the scallop industry in Maine. Mm-hmm. How do people eat scallops in Maine? I mean, is there a specific recipe? Is there a specific cooking method?
There are all sorts of ways. I mean, it's like saying, how do you eat chicken? There are many ways that you can eat them. To be honest, most fishermen's favorite way to eat scallops is raw, right on the boat. And they'll just pop the whole things down. They're very tasty raw. And when you eat them on the boat, or when you eat them, if I've just brought them to you, you know, they'll be moving around in your mouth. They've got this Lazarus response where they're so fresh that if you flick them, they sort of...
I've never heard it as a Lazarus response.
I found that out last year, that's what it's called, as a Lazarus response.
That's kind of hilarious.
On one website, I noticed a place that sells diver scallops claimed that it's because of the oxygen present in the scallop, because it had not been traumatized by the drag. That is not true. Drag caught scallops also have that, and I won't bore you, but drag caught scallops are just as sustainable as diver caught scallops. So I want to try to educate people that don't think dive or drag, think Maine scallop. If it's a Maine scallop, it's a day boat product that was landed on the day that it was caught. And if you get it from me, it's going to be delivered within 48 hours of being caught.
So day boat, diver, drag, what are other genre types of scallops?
I mean, the federal fishery, they have a very lucrative fishery where those are trip boats. So they're going off, they're bringing in, you know, tens of thousands of pounds at a time. And those are larger boats. I mean, if you go into Canada, you'll have some boats where they're freezing them on deck. And actually, the reason that I launched my whole company is that I mentioned when I started working at DMR, we made a lot of changes. And as a result of cutting the season in half and establishing a daily limit and closing 20% of the coast, you know, we had to go out there and speak to fishermen, hence my death threat. And at one meeting in Jonesport, we were talking about what we might do to help bring the resource back. And one guy was saying we should cut the daily limit. And I remember the guy, Morris Alley, stood up and said, you know, I wouldn't mind cutting the limit if I knew what price I was going to get. But I never know what price I'm going to get. And it just sort of hit me that here's this guy that's bringing in 80 pounds in a day, you know, from his little dinky boat. They're still moving when they're cut from the shell. And the price that he gets is being set by the federal fishery, where you've got these corporations bringing in, you know, there are sometimes hundreds of thousands of pounds, not generally, but, you know, say 15,000-20,000 pounds in a trip. And those federal scallops are good quality. I'm not trying to put down those scallops, but it's like they're the barefoot Chardonnay, and we're mixing in our high-end Bordeaux because no one's really focusing on them. And, you know, the consumer is losing out also because they're not getting to taste that. And there are dealers down east that are getting this pristine product. And because nobody is focusing on marketing that as a distinguished, differentiated product, they're treating it as if it were anything else. They're soaking them in warm water to so they'll soak up more, you know, they'll weigh more.
Yeah,
so there's a guy that, you know, he'll pay the fisherman $10 a pound and then he'll sell them for $10 a pound. But he soaked them overnight, so he's making 40%. You know, and so I tried to get dealers for a while to really, you know, focus on this. You should be selling, you know, just Maine scallops and do promotion for that. But because the federal fishery is so lucrative, you know, there wasn't really much of an incentive for anyone to change their business practices and to really do what I did, which is become obsessed with Maine scallops. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you mentioned a perfect person that we're going to talk about in the second half of the show, Maurice. Mm-hmm. His brother Raymond, mm-hmm. Maurice's son Preston, I believe.
Mm-hmm. You did your homework.
The men behind the scallop industry, the actual fishers, and you know what this does for their lives and their livelihood. Because what I've noticed throughout the years in doing research about fish, we are so willing to say Maine lobster, but we don't know who the fisher is.
Mm-hmm.
Yet this farm-to-table movement, we can tell you where arugula is from, where our hens lay their eggs. But fish seems to be, you know, not to use it as a pun, out at sea.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just not as solid ground as, you know, dealing with other industries.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm trying to change that.
And I'm sure you will. And we're going to take a quick break and talk more scallop with Tobe Braun. You've been listening to The Food Scene on heritageradionetwork.org.
We'd like to give a big welcome to our newest business members, Jonathan and Amelia Sawyer, at the Greenhouse Tavern in Cleveland, Ohio. Their restaurant follows green principles of organic and environmentally friendly ingredients while using recyclables and highly developed methods of composting, sourcing alternative energy, and focusing on conservation practices. To learn more, visit their website, www.greenhousetavern.com. To learn more about becoming a business member, email us, info@heritageradionetwork.org. Every Wednesday at noon, Dorothy Cann Hamilton, founder and CEO of the International Culinary Center, interviews the top chefs in the world on Chef Story. Hear from chefs like Christina Tosi.
I'm going to be the best pastry cook this restaurant's ever seen.
Francis Malman.
Cooking with fire, it's very feminine, it's very fragile.
And Jacques Pepin.
I was invited to work at the White House for John Kennedy.
Learn how the greats become great every Wednesday at 12 p.m. on Chef Story. HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Hey, and welcome back to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Just a few thank yous, Greenhouse Tavern, Jonathan and Amelia Sawyer, for being business partners. He's been on the show. We're going to air that episode soon, and I can't thank him and his whole crew enough. If you're ever in Cleveland, stop on by. And also thank you to Annie Brown for the introduction to Tobe Braun, who I think will also make waves in the seafood industry someday. But let's talk about the people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you mentioned Morris Alley, mm-hmm. who has a sibling and a son mm-hmm. that you've also worked with in the past.
Mm-hmm.
What did their work look like before you convinced them, or they convinced themselves to join?
Yeah, I don't want to take too much credit for all of this, because it was a group effort. I mean, I was the person at DMR that sort of made the recommendations, but it was a combination of the administration at the time, the work that I did, the work that the Scallop Advisory Council did, which is an industry group that helps advise the department on matters pertaining to the scallop fishery, and the fishermen themselves. And you asked about me convincing guys. I mean, guys knew that there was an opportunity with the scallop fishery. But they didn't have faith that it would ever change, and that even if they made changes, you know, it would still get overfished. And I think what I was able to add to it was just enthusiasm of, yes, you are going to change. And one of my coworkers once described me as 7 parts RoboCop and 3 parts cheerleader. And that's, and you need that. You need to appreciate. I mean, I really respected the fishermen that came to the Scallop Advisory Council that put their time in and tried to change this. And there had been times, they looked back at the glory days of fishing, for instance, in Gouldsboro Bay, where you used to be able to, you know, fill the deck in half a day. And what I was so pleased at this year, guys went into Gouldsboro Bay and said, I've never seen it like that. And that's because that was an area that we closed for 3 years. And so just a 3-year closure brought it back to a point where it was better than it had ever been in anyone's memory.
So let's talk numbers, because mm-hmm. back in 97, you've mentioned that, you know, hundreds upon hundreds, like 700 pounds could be brought into that bay by a single fisherman.
Even more than that. Yeah. So guys were fishing. I mean, one of the, Kristen Porter, who I went out with this year, he was talking about that they would go out and they would just absolutely fill the deck with scallops. Then they'd steam back and they'd shuck. And you can't shuck on shore. You have to shuck them at sea. So they'd go back to the mooring and they'd be shucking until midnight, and they wouldn't even be able to shuck all the scallops. And then the next morning, they'd try when they went out again to separate out so that they would know which was yesterday's and which was today's. And then, you know, they would just be fishing and shucking and fishing and shucking. And he was telling me this story this weekend, and I'm like, and you wonder why the fishery collapsed?
Yeah.
But I mean, he knows that. But I mean, there have always been booms and busts. But the problem is, when it's booming, people see that as a gold rush, so they rush into it, and then it goes over the cliff. And you need to control the harvest. You need to, you know, you should be allowed to make money, you know, let the boys work, as they say, but then you've got to stop it. You've got to stop fishing when there are enough scallops on the bottom so that they can replenish and still grow and give you more the following year. And that's what DMR is doing this year, is closing these limited access areas. What was closed for 3 years, now they're limited access areas. You have limited opportunities to fish in there. And these guys are going out and they're getting their limit sometimes by 9 o'clock in the morning, you know, and then they shuck. And so they've been out fishing for 3 hours, and they got, the original limit was 20 gallons. So 185 pounds, they're getting $10 a pound. That's $18.50. I mean, that's a very good payday for a few hours. Whereas last year, I actually I unfortunately came to New York City and went to a few restaurants and said, I'm going to get you these scallops. And because it was the last year that the closed areas were closed, they had been in the open areas and only fishing in those open areas for so long that they had sort of depleted those open areas. And I didn't feel right continuing to sell when they were fishing all day for 40, 50 pounds. So things are a lot brighter right now in Maine scallop fishery than they have been in years past.
Yeah. And so, I mean, that's a huge difference, you know, 1,000 pounds to the 15 gallon regulations mm-hmm. that are now. But it's also a change in, you know, lifestyle
mm-hmm.
in the sense, you know, like you said, the fishing industry or even the fishermen collapsing, trying to do that many pounds in a day
mm-hmm.
and not even be able to accomplish that. So you're not only trying to change the quality,
mm-hmm.
but also the quality of life of the industry.
I don't know. I'm thinking that my first impulse is that's a bit of a stretch. I don't know. Well, I mean, the fishermen would, I'm sure, would love it if we would just let them have a few days of those 1,000 pounds again, you know. But it is, you do have to change the mindset, I guess, is one way of, excuse me, sorry. You have to let them, make a living, but everybody has to understand no one's going to make a complete gold rush payday, because when you start doing that, then everybody suffers. And people are on board. They've seen what's happened in these closed areas in there. And that's something where, I mean, a lot of these guys, they lobster in the summer. in Washington and Hancock counties, which is where I believe it's 85% of Maine scallops are landed, there's really not much else, and not much is saying it politely, there's nothing else to do in the winter. And so having a scallop fishery that you, for instance, 20 pounds to 15 pounds, the DMR just changed the daily limit from 20 gallons to 15 gallons because they want this fishery to be extended through the end of the season. They're seeing that they're, you know, quite a bit of effort in these closed areas. They want to make sure that they're able to be fished throughout the rest of the season, so they lowered the limit. And that's what you need to be thinking of. It's a very small boat fishery. That's what distinguishes Maine from other areas. You've got these guys that are going out and coming back in the same day, and you want them to be able to continue doing that throughout the season.
Let's talk about other seasonal changes, and mm-hmm. let's talk a little bit about climate.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even global warming,
mm-hmm.
or... you know, coastal development, or, you know, whatever, toxic runoff.
Mm-hmm.
Have these things affected that industry too? Are there other things that you have to watch out for while trying to revive the scallop?
They have, but what we had to be careful of is in fisheries, in anything, but I think particularly in fisheries where you have more independent guys, everybody wants to blame everybody and everything else for the problems. And so we would talk about having to cut back on effort to bring the resource back, and they would be pointing at us saying, no, you need to stop the runoff. And okay, maybe there's some runoff, but that's not what collapsed this fishery. You guys overfished it. So that is, you know, there are issues, and there are, you know, Holterchem, there was a chemical plant that put a lot of mercury into the water, and so, you know, you need to be cognizant of that. I mean, a lot of the coast of Maine has been cleaned up with the regulations that went in place, you know, the 80s, and so I would say pollution is not a huge deal, perhaps, but then there isn't, you know, there are pockets where you have gray meats, and we don't know why those gray meats are occurring, and it's something to be aware of. Global warming certainly is something. Fortunately, you know, there's ocean acidification, and that's a big problem for a lot of the clam flats in Maine. I actually I've heard recently that some of the guys are only filling their hods half full because the weight of the clams, they're collapsing, or they're breaking the shells because they're not as thick as they had been. and of course, scallops have shells, but they don't seem to be as impacted by acidification as clams do.
Where does that acidification come from?
The increasing amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere means to actually, it's sort of counterintuitive, but there's more carbon available, and I don't have the exact chemical formula in my mind now. I'm like, damn, I should have written that down. But as the ocean waters warm, they become more acidic.
Interesting. It's kind of like seltzer.
Sure, I'll say it's like seltzer. You know what? I'm going to have all these emails back to me when I get back. Yeah. Like, Togue, I sent you that paper. Didn't you read that paper? It's like, no,
actually, I'm glad I'm
about
answering
scallops.
A lot of questions for you then.
It's like seltzer.
Yeah, it's like seltzer.
It's like a fizzy.
So, you know, there are so many factors that you're dealing with right now. Let's highlight some of the wonderful qualities mm-hmm. of the scallop itself. We talked about just eating them straight mm-hmm. and raw, and there are plenty of other, like mm-hmm. Coquille Saint-Jacques is one mm-hmm. of my favorite dishes ever, not just mm-hmm. scallop, not just seafood, ever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that seems blasphemous to, you know, bake a scallop in cream.
No, absolutely. There are lots of good. One of my favorite ways to cook them is I just take them and I saute them in butter and honey. I work at a restaurant in Maine, Jay's Oyster, where
people can stop by and see
people
you too.
Can stop by Jay's Oyster. They cannot get Maine scallops because Jay's Oyster will not sell my Maine scallops, much to my chagrin. But we do have good scallops, not great scallops, but good scallops from the federal fishery. And you saute the scallops in butter and honey. It's called Jay's scallops. And then they put them in a casserole dish and put rich cracker crumbs on top and broil them. And it's very simple, but very delicious. Kewpie mayonnaise. It's a Japanese mayonnaise. Mm-hmm. If you just pan sear a scallop in butter and then dip it in Kewpie mayonnaise, it's orgasmic. I mean, that is that is the best way, I think, other than raw, to serve a scallop.
Yeah.
One of the fishermen, whenever I go, I used to do port sampling, which is, you know, the guys would come in and you would see what they would catch and you could monitor how that would change over the season. And there was this old, crusty old guy that would come and hang out as we were waiting for the boats to come in. And I asked him once, you know, what's your favorite way? And he said, I like shake and bake. So, you know, shake and bake scallops.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've been hearing iterations of shake and bake recently with those hot Cheetos that you can crunch those up. But I don't know if you'd want to do that to your scallop.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, if it tastes good, do it. I don't care if you roll them in like Dorito dust. You know, if you like the taste of it, then you should eat it. So I'm not going to be all, you know, highbrow and say, you should never do that to a scallop. But, you know, wrap it in bacon. That's always good. However you like it. And these scallops are so good. Some people actually have said that they don't like them as well because there's not as much of a fishy flavor because they're so fresh. They haven't developed that fishy flavor. Well, it's like, keep it in your refrigerator for, you know, a few weeks because, I mean, the average length of a federal trip is, it's, you know, 10.5 days.
Wow.
So by the time you get them, they're 2 weeks old. So just buy mine, put them in your refrigerator for 2 weeks, and then you'll be fine.
And day boat is not a misnomer. I mean, how quickly are you getting these scallops to people?
What happens is I get them on either the day that they were harvested or the morning after, and then I deliver them that day. So I've been in Portland, I can do that. So I can guarantee within 24 hours in Portland, if I'm dealing with New York City, I have to be practical and say within 48 hours of harvest.
Oh, darn. I have to wait 48 hours for my scallops?
Yeah. So, but that's still, you know, 12 days sooner than you might be getting from the federal fishery.
Well, I advise anyone who's anybody, chef, restaurateur, home cook alike, go to Maine Day Boat Scallops, see all of Tove Braun's amazing information, check out her product, the blog. We were talking about a new little deal.
I'm trying to get into the New York market, and eventually I would like to be selling at what's going to become the new Amsterdam market for chefs at the old Fulton Fish Market, but that's not open yet. Eventually I'll be there, but for right now, if I can get up enough volume, I'd like to come down to New York City once a week, and I'm offering scallops for $20 a pound, and for every particular user, for every 20 pounds you buy, I will give you a pound for free.
See, as someone who really believes in upgrading the quality of fish in New York City, as far as retail or even in restaurants, I believe in this product. And this is not a, you know, infomercial. This is because I wholeheartedly care about what you're doing and also find you absolutely fascinating.
Well, thank you. I agree, but I'm not unbiased.
And I thought I could talk. Tove might have to have her own show just about the seafood industry eventually.
Happy to do it for free.
But thank you so much for being on.
Well, thank you very much.
Maine Day Boat Scallops.
.com.
Tove Braun. Check it out. She will come find you.
Maine scallops rule. Woo!
You've been listening to The Food Scene on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkell. Hoping to have you back here next Tuesday at 3. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.